The Music Business Worldwide podcast is supported by Volley Music, a leading financial management platform for the music industry. Volley enables you to track expenses, approve invoices, and make payments 24/7, 365 days a year. For your free trial, head to volleymusic.com. That's VOLYmusic.com.
Hello and welcome to Music Business Worldwide's Talking Trends podcast, which is supported once again by Volley Entertainment. My name is Tim Ingham, founder of MBW. And as ever on Talking Trends, we're going to dig behind a couple of recent entertainment industry headlines and give you our thoughts on what's been going on. I'm delighted as ever to be joined by Los Angeles-based Charlie Datry. Charlie is a music industry veteran. He's a consultant. He owns various businesses, including Datry Songs, CC Music Royalties, and Best Quality M&M. He's also an alumni of Def Jam, Columbia, what is now Disney Music Group, worked with various high-profile artists through his career. Charlie, welcome back to Talking Trends. Please pick a topic from headlines that you may have seen in the last week or so and explain to me what's grabbed your attention and why.
Hello, Tim. Yes, there's one that grabbed my attention that I wanted to bring up today because it is a funny combination of what would seem to be a good thing, but it's causing great discontent among people. And that is pertaining to the BMI buyout by New Mountain Capital. BMI, one of the classically major performing rights societies in America and with relationships with a lot of people around the world. But the checks started to hit this week to the various owners of copyrights, writers, publishing companies from the buyout. And there was a fund set up that sounds really impressive. When BMI announced their sale to New Mountain, they announced it's a $100 million fund that's going to be distributed among the writers and publishing companies. It's like, wow, $100 million. That sounds great. Well, you have to do the math because the scale of America, which I talk about a lot, there are 1.4 million copyright owners. And according to my not great mathematics skills, that comes out to about $71.43. And in euros and pounds, it looks worse. So there has immediately been a reaction because there are aspects of this that would seem to be not dissimilar to the trouble I believe has run into in their attempt to buy out their company, is that when you have a multitude of public partners or creators, in this case, upon whom your work is built, the value of your organization is built, there has not been a lot of disclosure. It's a small amount per person. Management has not disclosed what they're making, to my knowledge. And there is great discontent among the publishers and writers who make up BMI's business about, well, what's this process do to help us? Now, just to add further context, BMI was previously run as a nonprofit, and they immediately are going to be taking a larger share of the earnings to help finance this. And so there is skepticism. At the same time, there is an optimistic case to be made that it's going to be more efficient, that they are going to be more proactive in raising funds and making funds for their copyright owners. And so they are keeping most of the people for the time being in the tent of BMI, but there's a lot of questions. And so that's what I want to talk about today. The final point that I want to make about BMI historically, which is that ironically, the evolution of BMI, you know, BMI was started when radio was the hot young format as a broadcast music incorporated. And it was an attempt to get around paying songwriters more money because ASCAP was dominant. And there became opportunities in undervalued genres and they became a different thing. But it is an irony that they started that way. And it appears they maybe have come around to being that way again.
Lots of things come to mind as you're talking. Obviously, one element of all of this is that we have a Google-branded, Google-owned investment fund that is part of the new ownership of BMI. So it'll be very interesting to see what impact that has, both on the structure and direction of the company, the technological development, et cetera, in the future. But just to stick to the specific point that you're raising, you mentioned 1.4 million copyright owners. Is that the total BMI number of members and sort of number of songwriters? Yep, that sounds about right. I mean, that in itself just goes to show. I mean, we had the stats from Spotify the other week that I think they said there are 10 million artists, or I think they've actually changed their language on Spotify and now say there are 10 million uploaders, which is rather less emotive, less human language, and deliberately so. And again, we come back to, on a smaller scale at BMI, how many of those members, how many of those singer-songwriters that are part of BMI or have been part of this explosion in the membership base over the last 5 to 10 years, what Spotify would call professional or professionally aspiring songwriters or artists. That's a very interesting point. And it means the money's going to have to be diluted. But what it also means is if there are, let's say, 500,000 members whose music really doesn't have much in the way of commercial chops these days, it's not doing a lot on streaming services, not getting a lot of radio play, whatever outlet we want to pick in terms of where they could generate royalties, it's not reputationally very good for BMI to be sending out 500,000 checks that say, here's $2 for this is what you're worth out of the 100 million. I think it would always be impossible for BMI to get this right, whether it should have been 250 million or 50 million or 100 million. There was always going to be a sort of arbitrary element to that. I guess BMI would mainly care, and this is a guess, they would mainly care if the three major publishers and the other larger ones, BMG, Cobalt, etc., are happy with the bit of money they've been given out of this deal. But yeah, that's what sticks in my mind. Is I remember talking to someone high up at Sony Music when Sony paid out, if you remember, it paid out, it sold a bunch of its Spotify shares, and it paid out in a similar way to BMI are doing now, but it paid through to the artist their share, but it ignored unrecouped balances. And what that meant was all of the artists on Sony got a much bigger check than they were expecting. They probably weren't expecting a check full stop, but the checks were actually pretty meaningful. And I remember just someone high up at Sony saying to me, like, how much reputational good this is going to do when it comes to the next generation of artists. And they say, Sony sent a princely sum to your mentor, to your new label boss, your manager who used to be an artist. All of that stuff is going to have a drip down effect on the reputation of that company as being quote unquote the artist's friend. And I thought that was a really interesting perspective. And I think that BMI is now suffering from the opposite. Whether or not what they've done is fair, and we could debate that all day long in terms of the amount of money that they're giving out and the deal and the move to for profit, et cetera, et cetera. The reputation, the sort of echo effect of all of those people who have made music, whether or not it's super popular or not, if enough of them are dissatisfied and are insulted with a letter with BMI's logo on it, that's a reputational problem.
Yeah. And the truth is, it's a pain, but it's not impossible to move your repertoire, which is, it's a slow moving thing because it is not easy to do. But the truth is, if enough people, and there's two things about what you said. It may raises to me the question, like, well, as a for-profit company, are they going to look at this next year? And is there going to be a cull? Because the direction had been, these societies were not easy to get into 20 years ago. They democratized it, for better or worse, and added a lot of members, as you pointed out. And so is the friction of the transactional costs of servicing these members worth it if you're a for-profit company? ASCAP is still a collective. It's written by and for, and so it fits their narrative, whatever they, and so it's very interesting to see how that goes. And whether or not they decide to do that difficult Spotify plan of, well, if it's below this amount a year, we're not going to continue, which they no doubt have the ability to do.
I've raised that the same question editorially previously around this BMI situation. And so far, they say they're not going to do that. But to your point, let's see in a year or two where we are. Okay, I'll move us on to our second topic, which I'm going to fuck out the air today, but it is Weverse. If you're not aware of Weverse, I know Charlie is, and we talked before this podcast. Anyway, Weverse is the superfan app that is owned by HYBE, who are the previously known as Big Hit. They are the Korean company that was the home of BTS. Now it's home to Jungkook and Seventeen and many big K-pop artists, as well as running an operation in the United States led by Scooter Braun. And what happened this week was Universal announced a new 10-year distribution deal with HYBE. My understanding is that means that Universal will be the official distributor of HYBE music in 90% plus of the territories around the world. I don't think it covers Korea and a couple of other markets, but in the US particularly. It's a 10-year deal. It's a huge vote of confidence from Universal in HYBE's ability to transition beyond the BTS years and become a multi-genre global music company. But there was this element of the deal, and we picked up on it a lot on Music Business Worldwide because we found it fascinating that as part of this agreement, Universal has made an investment into Weverse. Weverse is like a mixture of, it's a little bit of Shopify. It's a little bit of kind of an editorial platform. It's a little bit of a Ticketmaster. You can buy tickets and you can certainly buy merch and other items. And it's a little bit of an old school fan club. You can just buy a digital $20, $30 annual fan club membership. And it's really fascinating. And it's been hugely popular in Korea and countries where K-pop has a huge presence, including the United States. This has been very interesting for various reasons, but just to talk specifically about the Universal deal, because I do have sources in the industry. There are things that I know that I can't always convey publicly. So I'm just going to tiptoe around this and do my best because Universal is a publicly traded company and I don't want to say anything untoward. But the amount of money that Universal has invested into Weverse, according to my sources, is probably significantly more substantial than you might think it would be. And I'll leave it at that because I have been given a figure, but I don't know, for example, if that figure breaks out X amount per year over 5 years or 10 years and or is to do with hitting revenue targets, et cetera, et cetera. What we do know for sure is the amount of money Universal has put in, as I say, is substantial. And it indicates to me that Weverse is going to become the bedrock of Universal's quote unquote superfan strategy. And we know that Sir Lucian Grange, the head of Universal, has said that the superfan strategy is a priority for Universal this year and in years ahead. And what he means by that, and I don't want to put words in his mouth, but hopefully I'm paraphrasing fairly here, is let's not treat every single fan the same. We've built our businesses doing great, monetizing fans at basically the same rate on every streaming service to date. But maybe we can foster deeper connections between artists and fans in specific fan communities. And from those fan communities, we will be able to monetize that relationship at a higher rate via merch sales, ticket sales. One of the things on Weverse that I've noticed, they have a digital currency called Jelly. This goes back to your Fortnite festival from last week and various gaming microtransactions. They have their own currency that fans can spend in the app. It's been a huge success in Korea. They were at 10 million active monthly users. They hit that milestone last year. And just looking at the stats that Hybe and the Weverse company have put out, those 10 million active users spend around 4 hours on average, I think, a month on the platform. I've been on Weverse, I've experienced it for myself, and I've seen there's some amazing things on there. And if you're a fan of particular artists, including the fact that there's a sort of direct messaging back and forth, how staged that is, how much it's run by AI or members of the team, doesn't matter. It's the feeling as a fan is that you can actually message your heroes, your icons, your favorite artists and get something back. We've seen Universal put emerging artists onto the platform in a sort of experimental sense to date. They've obviously liked what they've seen and they're going to commit to it more. As I said before, I think it's going to become the bedrock of their superfan strategy. Last thing on the stats and facts and figures around Weverse, Hybe in 2023 has a line in its financial reporting. That's what they call it, fan clubs, etc. And Weverse is part of that, if not the primary element of that. And it turned over somewhere between 60 and 70 million US dollars in 2023. It's a substantial business. And you can see why the idea is, well, if it worked this well in Korea, and if it worked this well as tapping into the export value of K-pop around the world, why wouldn't it work with emerging US artists? And that is the big question.
I actually have a point to make on that, because I think that it could well be. What this is all leading me to do is, like, I really want to spend time with the Weverse app myself, because I think that the music business has been searching for this solution, the professionalization, the institutionalization of a role that, as you touched on, fan clubs took to some degree, whether you want to call it the core fan, obviously the contemporary phrase is the super fan. If this is the solution to do that, I think that multiple generations of music business people would go, oh yeah, that's something we've been looking for. And it's quite possible that Scooter and the gang at Hybe have come up with something that could be that, and it unlocks a lot of business. It's absolutely true. And I think Lucian clearly has made the decision that it does, and they're into play. So well done.
Playing devil's advocate, it is all positive, right? But playing devil's advocate, I've got a couple of thoughts here. The first is about live. So I was speaking to a manager called David Bianchi not so long ago. David is a UK manager. It was involved in the rise of Charlie XCX. He was their manager for a long time, but now runs various artists. They've got lots of amazing acts, the Libertines being one that comes to mind. Also have Good Neighbours, there was a sort of big bidding war for Good Neighbours, I believe, recently. It had a big TikTok hit. Lots of great artists on their roster. And I was speaking to him recently about superfans and Goldman Sachs projecting $4 billion in potential revenues, additional revenues per year if the record industry gets superfans right. And we were talking, I don't want to put words in his mouth, but we were talking around two things. The first thing is the music industry already has an extremely sophisticated superfan mechanic whereby it ekes out higher and higher amounts of money from the most passionate fans on a scale. And it's called ticketing. And it's run incredibly with incredible sophistication, dynamic pricing, etc., by the likes of Live Nation and Ticketmaster, which I'll come back to. The second thing we were talking about is the appeal of the superfan to most artists is about D2C, direct to consumer. And it's kind of amusing sometimes to see the major music companies use this language. We've got a great D2C division, and or our D2C e-commerce operation is growing by 200% this year. And to the management community, D2C means cutting out the middleman, and the middleman is often the music company. So those two things are on my mind.
Well, yeah, that's why it's all about, is this the great new solution? Because my counter to that would be, yeah, it's absolutely true. And they all complain about it. At the same time, the D2C partners that they've used are changing regularly. They've yet to find that one lockbox. You were absolutely right on tickets. And in terms of the ticket distribution, that would have to be figured out. And it may or may not fit in this particular territory, although it's a big world, certainly for Universal Music Group. This other thing I would say is that they're constantly changing partners. Merch companies say they're going to do it. Third-party companies say they're going to do it. It's difficult, and the margins are difficult. But that's where it comes to me as well. Is Weverse that good? Because ultimately, the fan votes. And if Weverse works that well for the fan, then all things being equal, assuming you can negotiate a deal you can live with, they need service partners to execute their D2C. And so is this, to some extent, a service partner that partners with even the doubters? I don't know, because like I say, but it is. I see the potential there. And certainly people that know what they're doing are putting their money where their mouth is.
The case studies that Hive and Weverse have is effectively some of the most passionate, ardent music fans on earth in the K-pop world. And they've clearly monetized this to a high degree, and they have a very satisfied and growing fan base of 10 million people. When I look at Hive's financials, I think around a quarter of them, I plucked that out of the air, but I think I'm right, about a quarter of them are actually live revenues. And that is because Hive, like most successful large K-pop companies, controls pretty much every element and or has a participation in pretty much every element of what its artists do. They aren't just a record company or a music publisher. They're not just in music rights. They're also in name and likeness. They have a whole element called indirect artist involvement, I think, in Hive, which is pretty much about what we can use the artist's name, presumably with their approval, what we can use it for outside of music and advertising, etc. But yes, about a quarter of their revenues are in live. And that doesn't quite translate to what we might term the quote-unquote Western major music companies. They are not anywhere near as in live as Hybe is. And so do they get to participate? Do they get to make the most of an app like Weverse as Hybe could? One thought I had on this is Universal's old home and still its 10% shareholder Vivendi is currently in the process of going through what seems like an auction for its Vivendi Village division for about $300 million or more. And that includes C Tickets, which sells tens of millions of tickets every year. Is that a potential opportunity for a major music company to take a step more into the value chain of live? Who knows? And then my final thought on this, because I do have to finish. And as I say, Charlie, I could go back and forth with you on this a lot. Here is a direct quote from a very senior member of the music industry. I'm not going to tell you which sector they were in, publishing, management, music rights, live. But this was given to me in January, and we were talking about Weverse, and I was getting quite excited about the potential for Weverse in various markets. And they said to me, this is a direct quote because I wrote it down, generally speaking, K-pop artists do what their label, what their company tells them. US superstars do what they want. I thought that did sum up that maybe asking these artists to continually post content, create content, live stream, write direct messages to fans, etc., might not be so easy when you're dealing with an artist culture that is different than the one that where Weverse was born. But we shall see. Maybe I'll be surprised and a new generation of artists might embrace this. Who knows? But it'll be fascinating to watch. Charlie Dattery, thank you so much for joining us and Talking Trends. And thank you for listening if you are. And we'll be back with you soon.